The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield on 702.
Let's walk the talk.
On 92.7 and 106 FM.
In this first hour of The Money Show, explain to you why the world feels like it's falling apart all of a sudden once again in terms of the rand and in terms of stock market performance. The JSE taking a walloping on the day. The currency's lost 4% of its value. We'll also this evening chat to Sim Chabalala, Chief Executive of Standard Bank. We'll chat to Val Nikas, the CEO of Spur Corporation. Catch up with Stuart Theobald, the Chairman at Intellidex this evening on grey listing. More and more, we hear about grey listing and its dreaded consequences for the country. We'll talk about all of that this evening. We'll play the Brutal Biz Quiz. We'll bring you the best bits. And also tonight, talking about the world's most powerful SUV, James Bond style. Not the vehicle that he drove himself, you understand. But certainly a vehicle that carries the mark of Aston Martin. And it is a vehicle, a SUV. Out of the class, of course, of these remarkable British, the stable of remarkable British motoring. That is what we are looking at this evening here on The Money Show. The Money Show is brought to you by APSA Corporate and Investment Banking, Sustainable Finance for Growing Places, the bravery to imagine. That's Africanacity. APSA is a registered FSP.
The Money Show
with Bruce Whitfield on 702.
702.
We'll go to Val Nikas in just a moment, get hold of Sim Chabalala in just a moment as well. Standard Bank is interesting. Now, it saw a huge increase in profits for the first 6 months of this year, and profits were up about 30%. It's paid a nice big fat dividend. It is the biggest bank in Africa in terms of its asset base, and it's had a really spectacular 6 months. Its customers, like we're seeing, the customers of other commercial banks are in far better shape than you might have anticipated, despite the fact that there has been mass unemployment. And of course, we have a huge crisis of inequality in South Africa. But those that have succeeded in holding on to their jobs and growing their asset bases continue to perform well. And of course, into Standard Bank now is Liberty. Standard Bank bought out minority shareholders in Liberty, and Liberty is performing better as well. So there's a huge amount going right in terms of Standard Bank and its profit performance. So that's hugely positive. Also this evening, the Spur Chief Executive, Val Nikas, with a big turnaround in performance at Spur Corporation. Spur Corporation owns a whole bunch of brands, including Panarotti's Pizza and Rocco Mamas. People love Rocco Mamas. And, of course, Hussar Grill. It is in that particular stable, too. And we'll talk about the Spur brand, which they are taking more global in the new year as well. Big plans for the expansion of one of South Africa's most loved restaurant brands. This is The Money Show. I'm Bruce Whitfield. Stuart Theobald also in a moment on the issue of grey listing. It's our Money Show explainer this evening.
702.
Bruce is on The Money Show.
Let's kick off with our Money Show explainer for you on this Friday evening. And we're hearing a lot about grey listing. And yesterday it was Lesetse Ganyago, the Reserve Bank governor, saying that South Africa needs to take urgent action to prevent the country being added to a grey list of countries that aren't doing enough to stop the flows of dirty money. Negative economic consequences of increased scrutiny will be massive. What is grey listing? Stuart Theobald has been writing a lot about grey listing in recent times, financial analyst and chairman at Intellidex. Stuart Theobald on the line to us from the UK this evening. What is grey listing in words of one syllable or less, Stuart?
It means that South Africa is subject to increased monitoring by counterparts across the world, which means an additional level of due diligence is applied to any South African counterpart when doing business with them, largely in the financial system, when banks are dealing with South African clients or other South African banks. There is a new layer of precaution and diligence that they apply in those relationships, and that obviously implies additional costs.
Okay, so that implies additional costs. Does it lead to a complete freezing of assets? Does it lead to the Theobald family holiday being disrupted by the inability to use credit cards, for example?
No, it doesn't. And I think for the ordinary individual, the impact is not going to be immediate and not that tangible. It's really something that affects businesses and particularly businesses in the financial sector. So the fact that grey listing is really an international signal that South Africa's ability to enforce anti-money laundering and terrorist financing rules is not up to scratch, not up to global standards that are set by the Financial Action Task Force. And once you get put on a grey list, it means that everybody else is on warning that South Africa is below standards. And that means that everyone else has to take additional precautions when doing any business with South African institutions to ensure that they're not in some way enabling money laundering or enabling terrorist financing. So it's really about the way an international bank, as an example, would think about the risks that it faces in dealing with its clients. It could usually have a risk management system that categorizes clients between low risk and high risk. By being on a FATF grey list, it means that South Africa is now going to be seen as a higher risk jurisdiction. And an international bank, as an example, would therefore apply a different set of procedures in dealing with the South African counterpart. So, for instance, if an international bank had a big loan to a South African corporate, it would apply a much more enhanced, much more rigorous due diligence process to the relationship with that South African corporate. It would demand new sources of evidence, new documents to prove that that business is not in any way involved in money laundering or terrorist financing. Mm. So it just creates a great deal of additional transaction costs to businesses that are doing your cross-border financial activities. Now, it's unlikely that international counterparts are going to simply cut off South African businesses, but it certainly is going to be the case that international counterparts will be more wary of the business they're doing. So they'll be much stricter in reviewing the relationships, in paying much greater scrutiny to the details of every transaction that's happening. And they might well lose their appetite to expand their exposures to South African institutions. So it definitely means higher costs. It definitely means much greater difficulty in forming relationships with financial institutions in the rest of the world.
We got ourselves into this mess. Can we get ourselves out of this mess? Or have we got a long mountain to climb in terms of restoring our credibility? The credibility of the South African financial system is amongst the best in the world, but this failure to properly monitor flows of money or to adequately account for flows of money is something which is deeply concerning.
Yes, it is deeply concerning, and it is a serious black mark against the reputation of the South African financial system. Now, South Africa was put on notice in October last year that it was falling short. There were a set of recommendations that were made that South Africa needed to comply with in order to avoid grey listing within a year. So coming up for October this year, we will be reviewed to see what progress we've made in meeting those recommendations. Now, the progress has not, in my view, been swift enough and sufficient to satisfy FATF that South Africa has turned the corner and is heading towards compliance. I think the probability is that we will be grey listed. It's going to be extremely difficult for us to avoid that. And the question then becomes how quickly we can reverse that position. And if we act swiftly, we can reverse the position, the minimum time of a year. I think we've left it too late to be able to avoid grey listing completely. You might have seen in the Cabinet announcement just out earlier today that Cabinet approved an omnibus bill which has a series of amendments to legislation in order to bring us into compliance. But the problem is that bill still has to go through public consultation. It's going to take months at least to reach finality, and we've only got to October.
Thank you, Stuart Theobald, very, very much indeed. Stuart Theobald, financial analyst and chairman at Intellidex. Listening to that, the Standard Bank Group Chief Executive, Sim Chabalala. How worried are you about the prospect of grey listings? Sim, good evening.
Good evening, Bruce. Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure to talk to you and your listeners.
Bruce, I'm in the camp of people that is extremely worried. Whilst, you know, I accept, like many, that this has probably been priced in. But, you know, we live in a country that is just in a slow burn. You know, every little bit makes things worse and worse, and worsens the country risk premium. So I'm worried about the impact that this would have on the country's GDP. I'm worried of the impact it would have on our clients, and I'm worried about the impact that it would have on society in general.
Yeah, it's deeply concerning. We've left it too late, Stuart Theobald says. Do you think we've got the wherewithal and the will to get it solved?
Bruce, the example of Mauritius, I think, is telling. In Mauritius, when they got greylisted, if you recall, it took them about a year to remove themselves from that greylisting. But it required, in effect, you know, the mobilization of the entire nation. All stakeholders got involved, the regulators, government, different constituencies. And in fact, the whole process was led by their prime minister. That's how seriously they took it. They changed the requisite legislation. They closed the gaps. They cooperated with counterparties, and they got it right. We do have the wherewithal to do it, but I think we have a tendency to behave like an Athenian democracy, with a great deal of discussion and very little action. So unfortunately, I'm very concerned about how long it will take.
Yeah. I'm not laughing at that. I'm laughing at your descriptor, which is very good. It goes back to your training as a lawyer, you see. So, I mean, your customers are in pretty good shape, actually. I mean, your corporate customers are in good shape. Your insurance customers are in pretty good shape in terms of Liberty, which has rebounded very, very strongly. Your retail customers, those that have still got jobs and those that are employed, are actually in quite good shape. The real worry, I suppose, is a macro worry, and that is this great big gulf of inequality between those who are doing okay and those who most certainly are not. And that's, I suppose, got to be the thing that's keeping all of us awake at night.
Bruce, absolutely right. You know, when you look at the customer base or you look at South African society in general, you got lots of people who are enjoying the benefits of a very good social security net. I mean, South Africa's social security net is world class. You got household debt to disposable income, which is still pretty high, but that's pulled up by the wealthy. And you also got household debt servicing costs that are relatively low. And again, that's as a consequence of relatively wealthy people. And what's driving that? Well, a lot of wealthy people still enjoy the benefits of income from investments, dividends, interest income, and so forth. And they still have jobs. And then you got the middle market customers who, in many instances, as you say, are in a tough spot, suffering the double whammy of high interest rates and high inflation.
How does this play out? I mean, what is your reading of the tea leaves? The US Fed suggesting last night that they'll continue to raise rates. Lesitja Khanyahu's got an inflation problem still at 7.5%. He needs to bring that under control. We'll get some fuel price relief next month, but that's about all that seems to be going down at the moment.
Bruce, clearly, with global inflation where it is, with the price of food, soybeans, wheat, and with fertilizer prices where they are, it is reasonable to expect inflation to remain at elevated levels. And therefore, even here in South Africa, we could expect inflation to remain at elevated levels, although the prices of these commodities have started to slow down. Clearly, the consequence is that the authorities are very likely to increase interest rates by 0.75% this half. We don't think they'll do that again next year because, we think global inflation is starting to moderate. But, you're right. Interest rates are on the way up.
Most certainly. Thank you, Sim Chabalala. He is the chief executive at Standard Bank. It's Africa's biggest bank in terms of assets. And Sim Chabalala is the chief executive overseeing that particular business. A third of Standard Bank's earnings come out of the rest of Africa operations. It's been in the African market outside of South Africa since the 1970s, in fact. Very complicated structures and historical structures there. But it's been building that operation for an awfully long time. And things looking up. In terms of those who have not, of course, is the crisis waiting to happen.
You're with Bruce Whitfield on 702.
702.
Portfolio manager at Sunland Private Wealth, Nico Janse van Rensburg's with us this evening. The Standard Bank results are pretty good, Nico, yet the shares of banks generally on our market got pulverized on the day. And I suppose it's a global growth story rather than a South Africa Inc. story.
Good evening, Bruce. Yeah, good evening to your listeners, Bruce. Yeah, 100%. I mean, Standard Bank was down 4% on the day. Financial index was down 3.1% on the day. So, you know, following exactly like you said, it was the trend. Is it an Inc.? It's an Inc. store. I think it's part of it. But as you say, also, you know, Standard Bank had a good result. Headline earnings up 30%, declaring that interim dividend of 5.15 per share. I think the board said that's a new record. You know, and if you look at just at the fundamentals, Bruce, you know, 8.4 forward PE, 12% less than the 5-year average. You've got a 1.2 forward price to book, 22% less than the 5-year average. So in all, Standard Bank looks in good shape.
Yep, it certainly does. Spur is selling burgers, onion rings and chips at a hell of a rate. And people have like surged and gone back to restaurants across all of its brands, from pizza to fish and chips to burgers, of course, and to steaks at Hussar Grill. What do you make of the bounce back in Spur? Is the worst behind them?
Look, man, I mean, takeaways grew by 30%. I'm not sure how much of that is partly due to the Janse van Rensburg family, but you know, revenue was up 32.5%. You know, 2.4 billion. Headline earnings up 31%. So all in all, good results. You know, final dividend 78% per share. And obviously, you know, if you look at the numbers, you know, it's clear that the end of curfews did help the group. You know, these franchise restaurant sales, I think, actually now exceeding pre-pandemic levels in 2002. Yeah, so good overall. And, you know, if they can keep up with that and take benefit of the e-commerce and, you know, take sort of the global trend and benefit from e-commerce. And, you know, looking at they're opening 32 restaurants in South Africa next year or this coming year and 9 international. So good growth from a good base then for them.
How do the Janse van Rensburg takeaways arrive? Because I'm not a fan of the food delivery services. I don't care what you say. You can be as good as you like. A burger must be fresh. It can't be slipping and sliding in the back of some motorbike on the way to you. But that's not stopping Naspers. Naspers loves food deliveries. Naspers thinks food delivery is the best thing since, I don't know, collecting food yourself. They've bought a business in Brazil called iFood, and they've paid 30 billion rand to deliver food in Brazil. And I just look at these guys and I think to myself, my goodness me, that's an awful lot of hamburgers and pizzas that you've got to deliver hot and on time and keep customers happy. And I wonder about the wisdom of it.
Look, I mean, again, from a very subjective point of view, I completely agree with the stakes. So we get our deliveries by an Uber Eats or a Mr. Delivery. So I can see why they want to expand into somebody like Brazil. But look, they've invested in that business. I think the first investment was done, you know, 2013. So I think it also shows the disciplined investment approach from Prosus. You know, it's a big business. 80% market share. They serve 330,000 restaurant partners, 200,000 delivery partners. So massive business. And, you know, it's part of the stable now for Prosus. You know, they've got Swiggy in India and we all know Delivery Hero. So expanding that they're part of the business, and you know, we think it's a good idea.
I just don't know how they're going to make enough money to justify these sorts of expenses, because that's many, many millions of deliveries every year. Maybe I just don't appreciate the true scale of the market that's willing to have a cold hamburger. But yeah, that's just me. The US Fed made it quite clear last night, I think, that interest rates are going to keep going up and up and up in the United States. Sim Chabalala thinks we'll get another 75 basis points before the Reserve Bank here hits a pause. What's your view on the outlook of interest rates? Because that's a key driver for the catastrophe that happened on our market today, where we were down nearly 2% to below 70,000.
100%, Bruce. You know, inflation and interest rates have been driving the market psychology for months now. Okay? And we also in agreement, you know, I don't think the Fed can declare victory on inflation just yet. You know, sitting at, what's it now, 2.25 to 2.5 on the Fed fund rate. You know, are we going to see 3.5, 3.75% by year end? You know, only time will tell. I think we'll find more direction, you know, if it, you know, hawkish establish or whatever it might be. But I think we'll find more direction next week. I think Jackson Hole meeting is, we will most likely get some more concrete way forward from the Fed, you know, and obviously agree with Mr. Simtjobalala that, you know, South Africa will follow suit with at least a 75 basis point increase.
Thank you to Nico Janssen van Rensburg this evening, portfolio manager at Sanlam Private Wealth. Are you a person who gets their fast food orders, and are they fast, from delivery services? I've given up on food delivery services. I just have had, I only need one negative experience to go, you know what, it's actually just quicker to go and get it yourself, or to go out and have it there. But these food delivery services, not impressed. Not at all impressed. I don't know if you are. Certainly Naspers today buying this Brazilian business for 30 billion rand. I mean, what on earth do you have to deliver for that to give you a return over time? Take your calls on that, of course, coming up in the next half hour of the show.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking. Sustainable finance for growing places. The bravery to imagine. That's Africanacity. Absa's a registered FSP.
The Money Show.
The Friday File.
The Friday File.
Oh, the Friday File. What is more British than James Bond? Than gin and tonic, and of course, Aston Martin. But just how British is Aston Martin? Its owner is Canadian. It's making SUVs now, which is hardly Aston Martin. And motoring journalist Mark Smythe had to go all the way to Sardinia to test drive it. So Mini is German. Mark, Jaguar, I think, is Indian. Is Aston Martin still British?
Good afternoon, Bruce, and good afternoon to your listeners. Well, they'd like us to think it is, wouldn't they? And that link with James Bond still continues. Although, ironically, the location they chose in Sardinia was also the location used for the filming of James Bond's The Spy Who Loved Me, which was the one where the Lotus famously drove out of the water with Roger Moore behind the wheel. Right. They didn't like to talk about that.
Unfortunate thing, I suppose. But Sardinia must have been not a bad place to test drive a car. Is it very windy, bendy and hilly? I suppose it puts any vehicle through its paces. Were you impressed?
It certainly does. It's the home to a round of the World Rally Championship, a Sardinian tarmac rally. And yes, very narrow and twisty roads, something that generally you might think better suits a little two-seater sports car rather than a big, hulking, multi-ton SUV. But it did really well, actually. Surprised in terms of how well it handled. As what one would call more of a touring vehicle than an out-and-out sports car, which was interesting, despite having, you know, 520 kilowatts. Aston's tagging it as the most powerful SUV in the world because we need more of those, don't we?
Did you like it? If one's a fan of Aston Martin, will one love it? I mean, Maserati fans aren't necessarily fans of the Maserati SUV. We've seen Jaguar, of course, go into this market as well. I suppose you have to play in it. But is the vehicle going to be successful?
Yeah, everybody's in there. Ferrari said they wouldn't, but now they are with the Purosangue. McLaren said they wouldn't. They're busy with their first SUV at the moment. And of course, they're all following Porsche with its Cayenne that debuted a couple of decades ago. It is. There are a lot of people that will say it's not a proper Aston, and that's not just because of the fact that it has a Mercedes engine and all the rest of it. But it drove really well, handles really well, and generally ticks a very traditional Aston Martin box of being something that you can drive comfortably over a long distance. And then, you know, charge up Franschhoek Pass if you feel like it, or put it round the Kyle Army racetrack if you feel so inclined. And that's where we're going with a lot of these SUVs. It's not just something that makes a lot of noise. In fact, I would say it probably makes less noise than some of its rivals.
Talk to me about the configuration and the interiors of these vehicles, because there's so little to choose between the really top ends of these vehicles. So much of it comes down to personal preference about the interior design, the cabin design. It's very much more of a family vehicle than perhaps the DB9 might have been, for example.
Yeah, very much so. When you look at their sort of their two-seater Tourers, they're measured in how many golf bags you can get in the boot. With something like this, there's a lot more practicality to it. You can put a whole load of family weekend luggage in. You could get the kids' sports kit in it for rugby on a Saturday afternoon with no problem at all. The design is increasingly something that people are looking at with interiors rather than just the exterior of a vehicle. And in this kind of market, you're looking for all those traditional elements, hand-stitched leather, woods that have been chosen that have some history and tradition to them, and also the technology. So we're seeing a lot more digitization. The Aston comes in quite rightly for a lot of criticism for its somewhat dated infotainment system that originally, well, that does come from Mercedes-Benz, not one of the best, not one of the easiest to use, and changes will be coming no doubt down the line. But it is a very comfortable, very spacious thing, with a focus very much on the driver, which is what you would expect of anything like an Aston Martin, I guess.
And what is the price point likely to be? I mean, I don't know if they're going to be importing these things en masse into South Africa. Are fans going to have to import, you know, their own, for example, or will they be on sale? Will we be able to see it on the showroom floor in Sandton?
Well, yes, they are. They are coming through the official Aston Martin importer, which is Daytona, with Melrose Arch and others, priced at between $5.5 million to $6 million. The importers didn't have the best time because they launched the standard DBX, arrived in the country just as the pandemic hit, so they kind of didn't get to do much with it. Although I believe 50 people have already bought a regular DBX. And there's a lot of interest, from what I understand, in the 707 because of its tag as the most powerful SUV in the world, and the effort that's gone into it over the standard model. So, yes, no doubt, even with that rather hefty price tag, I suspect we will be seeing a few on the roads.
Astounding. Mark Smythe, thank you very, very much indeed. Mark Smythe is a freelance automotive journalist. And what a fabulous story today of that SUV, the latest of the DBX 707. It is the latest in the DBX range, of course. And you're an Aston driver. I'd love to know what it is about the Aston. I can't say I've ever been in one. But they certainly are remarkable vehicles from an aesthetic point of view. They are, I know them from watching Top Gear in the olden days, and you get a clear sense that the Top Gear guys were huge fans of the heritage of the vehicles, the power of the vehicles, and they were made incredibly sexy by James Bond and the association there. But I wonder, whoever the new James Bond is, are they going to be, you know, getting married, settling down, and taking kids off on a trip, I wonder, in the DBX 707. R5.5 million price tag. Steering wheel possibly extra, wheels extra, I don't know. But certainly it is a remarkable vehicle. And we're seeing lots of these marks, the car brands, coming out with their versions, of course, of these luxury goods. Thanks very much to Mark Smythe this evening, the freelance automotive journalist, giving us a feel. I can almost smell the leather, smell the interior. 50 people have bought these, the original DBX, and there'll be orders, I have no doubt, for more. I haven't seen one. Have you? Were you impressed? Did it turn your head? Did you think, my goodness gracious me, how wonderfully successful that person must be? Or did you think other things, I wonder? In a moment, we'll play the Brutal Biz Quiz, as we do on a Friday night. And the Brutal Biz Quiz for you. First question for you this evening. Which country's central bank has stunned markets by lowering interest rates, even with inflation at a 24-year high? This country's got inflation at 80% and rising. And they're cutting interest rates from 14 to 13%, if memory serves, asking for trouble. Gobble, gobble, gobble. Which country is doing that? 011-883-0702, 021-446-0567. Come and play this evening's edition of the Brutal Biz Quiz.
The Money Show.
With Bruce Whitfield on 702.
702.
Which country's central bank stunned markets this week by lowering interest rates from 14 to 13%, even with inflation at 80%, a 24-year high? Trevin in Johannesburg.
China?
No, China doesn't have that level of problem, Trevin. Terribly sorry about that. Thabo in Pretoria West.
It'll be Turkey, Bruce.
It will be Turkey, Thabo. Hi, nice to have you. Turkey's central bank cutting the benchmark policy rate despite inflation hitting 80%. The country's main policy rate, which has been at 14% for the last 7 months, cut to 13%. It's seen as a complete mismatch. Complete mismatch. Which animal has Toko Dodiza placed under lockdown, Thabo?
Just repeat that question, please. Sorry, Bruce.
Which animal has Toko Dodiza placed under lockdown?
Oh, man. The rhino. I don't know.
No, it's a domestic animal, Thabo. No, she can't stop rhinos because rhinos will go straight through the fence. There is a concern about a particular disease and it's spreading across provinces. And this particular disease is prevalent in cattle and in animals. Oh, dear. Tamiz, if you get this wrong, you're never allowed to phone the Biz Quiz again. What animal has Toko Dodiza put in lockdown?
Cattle.
Oh, wow. How did you know that? You genius. You genius, genius, genius. Absolutely. Now, here's a clue to your next question. Have a listen to this.
The ultimate in British engineering.
What is James Bond's signature car, Tamiz?
Aston Martin.
Absolutely. Aston Martin, of course, releasing the new DBX 707. You would think they would call it the DBX 007, but they lack imagination. They say it's an SUV like no other, and at nearly $6 million. I would think so, too. According to the CEO of Takealot, and you'll be hearing the discussion or part of the discussion that we had with her on Wednesday night, Mamukhai Mahlare, she was our shapeshifter. What at the moment, day after day after day, is the most sold item on Takealot.com?
Sure. This one I don't know, Bruce.
Guess. What does every household want at the moment? Because that is the thing that is being sold most. Every day, people are buying this thing.
A
Wi-Fi router. I suppose lots of people would like a Wi-Fi router, but they're not buying it on takealot.com. Let's say in Soshan Guve, what is the number one item that people want in their households? A kitchen device.
Toaster?
A toaster. No! Patricia in Melville.
Air fryers.
An air fryer, absolutely. I was stunned by this factoid. Apparently, air fryers are important. Who knew? Well, I mean, clearly lots of people know. And Mamukhai Mahlare was our shapeshifter this week. She took over from Kim Reid, who's elevated himself to a strategic role. And Mamukhai will be with us in our best bits coming up after Eyewitness News at 7 o'clock. Based on the assets that it has, which is the biggest bank in Africa, Patricia?
Oh, gosh.
I mentioned it twice in the first half hour of the show, in fact.
Which I missed. Can I guess Standard Bank?
You could guess Standard Bank. You could guess Standard Bank. And if you guessed Standard Bank, George, would she be right? Let the crowd decide. Should she live or die? Standard Bank is correct. Applause. Absolutely. Standard Bank has been on the African continent outside of South Africa in various forms for the last 50 years or so. Which Asian country is seeding clouds, inducing rainfall because of the huge Northern Hemisphere drought that is crippling many countries, many economies at the moment?
I don't know this one. This sounds fascinating.
Yes. But there's only one that can really afford to do it in this sort of scale, I would think.
China.
Yeah, I don't know how you got that, Patricia, in Melbourne. You've got this. Chinese authorities are trying to induce rainfall in parts of central and southwest China amidst a severe drought. The Yangtze River, it's one of the longest rivers in the world, is now at record low levels. And in some places, there's been less than half of the usual rainfall. It's got Northern Hemisphere economies really, really, really worried. There is a government agency that has instructed the ANC to settle its employees' provident fund. It hasn't told them to pay wages. That's another battle altogether. But this is a government agency. It goes by the initials of FSCA, Foxtrot Sierra Charlie Alpha. What is FSCA in full?
Financial services. I don't know. I'm afraid to say. Oh dear.
One out of four is 25%, which not even in South Africa is a pass mark, I'm afraid. Patricia,
oh dear.
So... Patricia, thank you. You're a sport. What a lovely player of the Brutal Biz quiz this evening. If you'd like to have a go, our lines are open on 021-446-0567, 011-883-0702. Government agency. It is called the FSCA. It is the financial what? There are three whats in there. I wonder what it is. Let's see whether or not you can get this one right and steal from me the whiz of the title of Whiz of the Brutal Biz Quiz. Why don't you give us a call this evening and we take your calls. I don't know if you've seen over the last week or so things called the Hunger Stones. Now, we're talking about the drought in China. The Chinese authorities wish to seed clouds to try and get them to rain. Well, receding lakes and rivers have exposed ghost villages across Europe, even a Nazi vehicle and even a Roman fort. But what is actually really interesting is in 1616, somebody carved into rocks along the Elbe River in the northern Czech town of Děčín near the German border. And they carved into this, so these are called the Hunger Stones, and they mark the levels of historic droughts. And they warn future generations of famine. They say, if the river drops below this level, then beware, famine is coming. And Czech researchers in 2013 described the stones as chiseled with years of hardship, the initials of authors lost in history. And these stones warn, they say, misery is coming if you can see this writing. The wisdom of ages past, of course, being exposed. And yeah, these hunger stones are now being revealed for the first time in years in these rivers across the Czech Republic and in Germany. The FSCA is also known, Robert in Houghton, as what?
Hello, Bruce. The Financial Sector Conduct Authority.
You are the whiz of the Brutal Biz Quiz by default this evening, Robert in Houghton. Well done to you. Financial Sector Conduct Authority ordering the ANC to fund the 86 million rand it stole from staff, because that's what it did. If you take money and it's meant to go into provident funds and it doesn't go and you kept it, and now in normal circumstances, you'll be called a thief. They won't be paying the staff either, which is another insult to adding insult to injury. But the ANC Staff Provident Fund is a defined contribution fund. So it's got 535 members and 86 million rand in contribution arrears. So the money was used, I guess, to fund operations and things. And it's an absolute flippant disgrace. And I wonder whether or not the party is going to be able to do so. That's wrapping up the first hour here on The Money Show. We've had our fair share of excitement this evening. I hope you've enjoyed it. On the next hour, of course, the best bits of The Money Show from the week that has been, including a fabulous Other People's Money feature this evening, which many of you have related to in a very, very strong fashion. I think you've been very moved by it. Also, a fabulous shapeshifter this week. Warren Ingram was exceptional when it comes to how much money you need to have to ensure that not only do you survive, but you thrive in your retirement, but why it is that you should be wary of having too much as you go into retirement. Because what is it doing sitting rotting in your bank account when it could be doing some good? That's what's coming up in the next hour here on The Money Show.